Vivaldi's Largo movement from Winter in his Four Seasons signals that we are back here, invited to attend another Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and this Evening Under Lamplight, we're going to be looking at the theme of mothers of different sorts. That is, all sorts of mothers and motherhood and motherly relationships. Why this theme? Oh, the answer is quite easy. I simply wanted to play for you one specific song called Mother, and so I built the theme around that song. Which of the hundreds of songs titled Mother do I have in mind? We'll get to the song later, but I'll whet your appetite by saying it's by a new group from Manchester called Louis Barabbas and the Bedlam Six. I have connections with the trombonist, and when my son had me look at the group on Facebook, I felt this is just the thing for Evening Under Lamplight. So here we are. But wait a bit until we get to the song. Don't forget you can also find us online at momentsunderlamplight.com, where you can listen again to the show as podcast, leave comments, and wander around the other interesting pages of that site. This show comes to you once again from Axel's studio. You really ought to give the place a name, Axel. Does that roundabout at the corner have a name? Well, you could just call the studio Roundabout Studio. Wait, it always sounds better to add an S. How about Roundabout Studios? There would be a pun, too, about all the turntables you have here and the impressive number of vinyl albums filed along the floor. So, okay. You are listening to Evening Under Lamplight, coming to you from the famous Roundabout Studios here in rainy Cambridge. Let's first have a salute to motherhood itself. Hurrah for motherhood, right? But it's a drag, too, to be a mother. So often stuck at home with the kids going crazy. Mother needs some help or some little helper. What a drag it is getting old. You know that line. And I suppose you know that itchy guitar, too.
What a drag it is getting old. Kids are different today. I hear every mother say, mother needs something today to calm her down. And though she's not really ill, there's a little yellow pill. She goes running for the shelter of her mother's little helper, and it helps her on her way, gets her through her busy day. Things are different today. I hear every mother say, cooking fresh food for her husband's just a drag. So she buys an instant cake, and she buys a frozen steak, and goes running for the shelter of her mother's little helper. And to help her on her way, get her through her busy day. Doctor, please, some more of these. Outside the door, she took four more. What a drag it is getting old. Men just aren't the same today. I hear every mother say, they just don't appreciate that you get tired. They're so hard to satisfy, you can tranquilize your man. So go running for the shelter of a mother's little helper, and for help you through the night, help to minimize your plight. Doctor, please, some more of these. Outside the door, I hear every mother say, the pursuit of happiness just seems a bore. And if you take more of those, you will get an overdose. No more running for the shelter of a mother.
Hmm. Notice that first she takes a pill, then two pills to help her through the day, then four pills to help her through the night, and finally, in Jagger and Richard's half-hearted attempt to moralize, no more pills since she's had an overdose. Just what we need. The Rolling Stones warning housewives of the danger of taking too many drugs. By the way, there are four things we hear every mother say in this song. Watch how they build to a climax that makes living unbearable without running for the shelter of her mother's little helper. Kids are different today. Things are different today. Men just aren't the same today. Life's just much too hard today. These are just temptations, I think we'd say, or another name for temptations is excuses. Something's wrong. Taking a pill won't help solve the problem. And yet, if this pill is the only thing to get her through her busy day, then who are we to judge this? Let's instead be aware of the weight of motherhood in the world we live in and see if we can help lift some of that weight for others. And here's a rather simplistic comic fable about two sisters, Sybilla and Priscilla. Sybilla, a wild single woman running around with her smart young friends and her luxury flat, and Priscilla, a young mother, stuck at home making breakfast for the kids, doing the laundry, her only break the occasional women's weekly magazines. She was so jealous of her sister. They mean envious, of course, not jealous. It's an elegant little tale with Nicky Hopkins' stately harpsichord running through the piece and the wistful strings later on. The song is called Two Sisters, and it comes from the 1967 album Something Else by the Kinks. Notice the way the bass holds back and then enters with a deadening thud at the word washing machine.
Sybilla looked into her mirror. Priscilla looked into the washing machine and the drudgery of being wet. She was so jealous of her sister and her liberty and her smart young friends. She was so jealous of her sister. Sybilla looked into the wardrobe. Priscilla looked into the frying pan and the bacon and eggs and the breakfast to serve. She was so jealous of her sister and her way of life and her luxury flat. She was so jealous of her sister. She threw away her dirty dishes just to be free again. Her woman's weekly magazines, just to be free in. And put the children in the nursery, just to be free again. Priscilla saw her little children, and then decided she was better off than the wayward lass that her sister had been. No longer jealous of her. So she ran round the house with her curlers on. No longer jealous of her sister.
So she ran round the house with her curlers on. There's the kink in the song, the twisted line that balances between the ludicrous and the compassionate. To what extent we are to read something autobiographical here, I'm not sure. It's true, though, that Ray Davis married and had a child in his early 20s, just as the Kinks were taking off, and thus was tied to a family while his brother Dave, still in his teens, became a wild libertine. Well, yes, let's say libertine, in swinging London. Was Ray envious of Dave's freedom to play around like that? Yes, of course. But then, well, no, of course not. There's no problem having it both ways. Now, when we talk about mothers, we're talking, by definition, about women's relationship with their children. And we can look at mothers' relationships with their sons and with their daughters. Let's look at the mother-son relationship first. Incidentally, my own mother listens to Evening Under Lamplight. But as she told me last week, for some reason her computer hasn't been able to play back the show lately. That's a shame, I said to her. The next show is going to be about mothers. Oh, will it be complimentary? She quickly asked. Complimentary? Okay, sure. But here on Evening Under Lamplight, the compliments come from directions you may not be expecting them to come from. So anyway, this man calls his mother in Florida and asks her how she's doing. Me, she says, to tell you the truth, I'm not doing so good. Mama, what's the matter, the man says. I don't want you to worry, the mother says, but I'm very frail. I haven't eaten anything for a whole week. A whole week, the man replies, that's terrible. Are you sick or something? Sick? No, I just didn't want my mouth to be filled with food. If you should sometime decide you wanted to call me. And there we have it. The Jewish mother finding inventive ways to make her son feel guilty. Oh, she has ways of making the daughter feel guilty, too. We may get to that later. And a disclaimer. Of course, nothing said here about mother-son relationships necessarily bears any resemblance to the mother-son relationship I'm part of myself. As for the mother-in-law-son relationship, well, that's a different matter. Now, for a song you've probably not heard before. I'm very proud of, well, sort of proud of, my collection of early Miracles albums. This song, called simply Mama, comes from the Miracles' second album, Cookin' with the Miracles, from 1961, with an album with an album cover featuring the Miracles lined up with chef's hats on their heads and big mixing bowls and wooden spoons in their hands. If this was television, I'd put the album cover up to the camera for you to see. The song is sung by the son, who announces to his mother that he's found a woman whom he knows his mother will approve of. He's known her for only a week or two, but I'm glad that I waited like you told me to. See, it's supposed to be a funny song. And he tells his mother she'll be pleased to hear that they're moving in with her, and he knows they can depend on the mother to support them. Come on, be happy, don't you know your order? You ain't losing a son, you're just gaining a daughter. Of course, the Jewish mother would already have collapsed at the other end of the line. The song begins with an early example of Smokey Robinson's, what, crooning. If you're going to attend to this song, attend to it, I suppose, for its curiosity value. The Miracles' Mama, recorded, it sounds, in a studio with just one mic. You know you're the first person on your block to hear this song. Perhaps it's the first time it's been played on the air in 50 years, or maybe ever. Up-to-the-minute history here on Evening Under Lamplight, all for you. The mother on that song gave her son lots of advice, which he followed in a comic way. But mother's advice can also be a little darker. All those warnings about what not to do. There are ways to have fun, and there are ways not to have fun. And some parties, well, mama tells you not to come to.
Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come. Mama said it ain't a way to have fun. Open up the window, let some air into this room. I think I'm almost choking on the smell of stale perfume. And that cigarette y'all smoke about to scare me half to death. Open up the window, let me catch my breath. Many things I ain't never seen before. Don't know what it is, but I don't want to see no more. Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come. Mama said it ain't the way to have fun.
There are several, perhaps better-known versions of this song, but here's the original by the man who wrote it, Mama Told Me Not to Come by Randy Newman. Only his voice can catch the combination of being fed up, overwhelmed, pissed off, and frightened all at once. I want to bring in Robert Louis Stevenson for a moment here. He had a very odd relationship with his mother, who was a cheerful, loving, adventurous woman, sometimes more like his older sister. She would go into hysterics during the times when Lewis and his father would quarrel violently about religion, and she was often wounded by her son's frequent trips away from home. When he was ill, she was always ready to drop everything and come with him or come to him, or, what was more useful, to approach the father with a request to send more money. I don't have a sense of her as a nag, not in the way his father was, but she surely was disappointed with the way Lewis dressed, with no attention to the rules of polite society, showing up at a formal dinner party in a blue flannel shirt, for instance, or wearing an outrageous hat long after it had lost its shape and color. When, aged 23, he was recuperating from a nervous breakdown, brought on by tension at home, he wrote to his mother from Mentone on the Riviera, as if to show her that some people did not mind how he dressed. "I have worn the same necktie for 4 months," he said, "and I am the companion of princesses." He tells her that he'd bought a new hat, one that made him look like an urban brigand. Who can say exactly what an urban brigand's hat would look like? But surely the respectable Margaret Stevenson in Edinburgh would not have liked to hear about it, nor about the magnificent cloak Stevenson's friend Sidney Colvin brought back for him from Paris. "If you could see my cloak," he wrote to his mother, "you would have more respect for me. It is magnificent and drapes one after the fashion inimitable. Don Giovanni is the nearest thing, but I think there's more dignity in RLS. You can just hear his mother saying oy vey as she reads the letter. Actually, we do have her voice, commenting about Lewis's taste in clothes, as it comes to us in a letter she wrote to her sister from Tahiti. By the way, it says something about her that, a recent widow in her late 50s, she left Scotland for the frozen winter in the Adirondacks in New York, and then had no hesitation about traveling in a small yacht through the South Seas with her son, daughter-in-law, and step-grandson, and that they all got along well together. As they were leaving Tautira in Tahiti, where they had lived closely with the native community, Margaret Stevenson was told by the Catholic priest that he was going to preach a sermon about Robert Louis Stevenson, because, among other reasons, his style of dress is to be held up as an example. He only wore what was useful and necessary, and never went in for anything ornamental or extravagant. Louis is delighted that he has at last found someone who appreciates his taste in dress, and wishes he could have a copy of the sermon to send to some of his scoffing friends. I may here privately mention that I think his dress should rather have been held up as a beacon to warn than an example to imitate, seeing that he seldom wore anything but a pajama suit intended only for sleeping in, very badly shaped and dreadfully unbecoming. About 10 years earlier, waxing highly moralistic in the style of Thoreau, Stevenson had declared that one should wear only those clothes one wants to wear, never those that society insists one wears. "Dress is my own affair," he said, "and that of one other in the world. That, in fact, and for an obvious reason, of any woman who shall chance to be in love with me." He was thinking of his wife-to-be, who wore unconventional clothes herself, but I imagine his mother felt it was her affair too, just a little. But then the resentment can come in. And this leads us to our special song for the evening, called simply Mother, and brought to us by Louis Barabbas and the Bedlam Six. I hope, like me, you will be captured by the wit, both in the words and in the delivery, and also in the video, which you must try to see on YouTube. The song appears on their album Memoir Noir. I won't give you all the words, but here's the first verse, and the second verse too, I think. It gives you a taste of what's to come. I crumpled up all the creeds of man and ran out into the rain, where I mourned for my lost virtue, but mourned more for what remained. I'd give my grief to God, but I'm just too proud to pray. Mother, why did you raise me this way? I'm a busted bulb in your lighthouse. I'm your guilt dashed on the cliff. I read about perpetuity. I hope it's just myth. Some people talk of progress, but all I see is decay. Mother, why did you raise me this way? I want you to attend to the trombone, but actually attend to everything, witty and freaky at the same time. You won't be able to catch all the words, but that just makes it more eerie.
I crumpled up the creeds of man, ran out into the rain, where I mourned for my lost virtue, but mourned more for what remained. I'd give my grief to God, but I'm just too proud to pray. Mother, why did you raise me this way? I'm the busted bulb in your lighthouse, the gift stashed on your cliff. I read about perpetuity, I hope it's just a myth. Some people talk of progress, but all I see is decay. Mother, why did you raise me this way? I pin my hopes in the future, like martyrs to a tree. But I haven't yet built the religion that can hold me. I hear tomorrow will be better. Heard the same thing yesterday. Mother, why did you raise me this way? Each night I like to sleep, though where Christian goes to lies. God can take my body, I'm leaving my soul to science. I'm sure he had a plan, man, but something's gonna glay. Mother, why did you raise me this way?
Or is it just stained glass? I've changed my face so many times. Wish I could change the past. There are more epithets and cigarettes stubbed out in my ashtray.
Mother, why didn't you raise me this way?
I'm a gentleman, charlatan, prose from a poison pen. Literally made a big mistake, told the truth and said it's fake. Friends are all long gone, there's none left to betray.
Mother, why did you raise me this way?
Know the way off this misery go round. I wanna see the spin on me in St. Peter's dossier.
Oh, mother, why do you raise me this way?
I'm told there'll be no jobs till somebody dies. Well, a salary's another word for consolation prize. So I'm plodding through perdition like some latter-day Dante.
Mother, why do you raise me this way?
All my thoughts, but I still haven't seen that penny. You asked if it were bad times. Yeah, many. I long to say I love you, but it's such a damn cliche.
Mama, why didn't you raise me this way? Oh, mama, why didn't you raise me this way? Oh, mama, why didn't you raise me this way?
I keep my guardian angel close, but always gagged and bound. Listen to the other lines, too. They're little gems throughout the whole song, with Louis Barabbas and the Bedlam Six singing Mother. Look them up on YouTube as just Bedlam Mother or Barabbas Mother. I hope you'll like that clip, though it might have been more suitable for our last show on Halloween. Here on Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. Mother, why did you raise me this way? Is the refrain of the song. That's right, put the blame on the mother. But of course, it seems likely that something in the way the mother brought him up makes it feel quite natural for him to go blame someone else for his own inadequacies. And who better to blame than Mother? But instead of blaming Mother for the way she raised you, how about a little reassurance? I'm all right, Ma, we can say, even though in this awful world it seems impossible to be all right. It's strange, though, isn't it, that in one of Dylan's bleakest songs he should make such a point of reassuring his mother? We played Dylan's It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding for the show on Strangers quite some time back on 209 Radio. But that was the live 1964 version we played. Here's the studio version from Bringing It All Back Home. The song is really little more than a catalogue of vivid, confusing, surreal images bound together by the deft rhyming and the sudden shifts in pace when we come to the refrain. I had the ambition a few years ago to memorize the lyrics and for once get them all in the right order, but this ambition was never achieved. Still, Dylan knew the words, and here he is giving them to us.
Darkness at the break of noon. Good. Shadows, even the silver spoon. The handmade blade, the child's balloon. Eclipses both the sun and moon. To understand, you know too soon. There is no sense in trying. Pointed threats, they bluff with scorn. Suicide remarks are torn from the fool's gold mouthpiece. The hollow horn plays wasted words, proves to warn that he not busy being born is busy dying. Tempt expectations page flies out the door. You follow, find yourself at war. Watch waterfalls of pity roar. You feel to moan, but unlike before, you discover that you just be one more person crying. So don't fear if you hear a foreign sound to your ear. It's all right, Ma, I'm only sighing. As some worn victory, some downfall, private reasons, great or small, can be seen in the eyes of those that call to make all that should be killed to crawl, while others say don't hate nothing at all except hatred. Disillusion, words like bullets bark as human gods aim for their mark. Make everything from toy guns that spark to flesh-colored Christs that glow in the dark. It's easy to see without looking too far that not much is really sacred. While preachers preach of evil fates, teachers teach that knowledge waits, can lead to $100 plates, and goodness hides behind its gates. But even the president of the United States sometimes must have to stand naked. And though the rules of the road have been lodged, it's only people's games that you got to dodge. And it's all right, Ma, I can make it. Advertising signs that con you into thinking you're the one that can do what's never been done, that can win what's never been won. Meantime, life outside goes on all around you. You lose yourself, you reappear. You suddenly find you got nothing to fear. Alone you stand with nobody near. When a trembling distant voice unclear startles your sleeping ears to hear that somebody thinks they really found you. A question in your nerves is lit, yet you know there is no answer fit to satisfy. Ensure you not to quit, to keep it in your mind and not forget that it is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. But though the masters make the rules for the wise men and the fools, I got nothing, Ma, to live up to. For them that must obey authority that they do not respect in any degree, who despise their jobs, their destiny, speak jealously of them that are free, do what they do just to be nothing more than something they invest in. While some on principles baptize to strict party platform ties, social clubs in drag disguise, outsiders they can freely criticize, tell nothing except you to idolize and say God bless him. While one who sings with his tongue on fire gargles in the rat race choir, bent out of shape from society's pliers, cares not to come up any higher, but rather get you down in the hole that he's in. But I mean no harm, nor put fault on anyone that lives in a vault. But it's all right, Ma, if I can't please him. lady judges watch people in pairs, limited in sex they dare to push fake morals, insult and stare, while money doesn't talk it swears, obscenity who really cares, propaganda all is phony. While them that defend what they cannot see with a killer's pride, security, it blows their minds most bitterly. For them that think death's honesty won't fall upon them naturally, life sometimes must get lonely. My eyes collide head on with stuffed graveyards, false goals I scuff at pettiness which plays so rough. Walk upside down inside handcuffs, kick my legs to crash it off, say, okay, I've had enough, what else can you show me? And if my thought dreams could be seen, they'd probably put my head in a guillotine. But it's all right, Ma, it's life and life only.
We each probably have certain lines from this song that mean a lot to us. And the sign of great literature is that each time we come to it, we see something new. I'll let you choose and chew upon your own significant lines from the song. But let me say one more word about the rhyming. Dylan sets himself the task of rhyming 5 lines together, and most of the time he fulfills this task with perfect rhymes. But by the final stanza, things are getting too crazy for any hope of a perfect rhyme. Attend to what is going on there. First of all, instead of 5 rhymed lines, there are now 6. All the lines end with some variant of uff, but only 3 are exact. And the first 2 lines do not end at the end of the line, but run on to the next line, what we call enjambment, putting the rhyme into an even more perilous position. My eyes collide head on with stuffed graveyards, false goals, I scuff at pettiness which plays so rough, walk upside down inside handcuffs, kick my legs to crash it off, say, okay, I've had enough. Stuffed, scuff, rough, handcuffs, off, enough. And then the final line, which has to rhyme with phony and lonely from the end of the previous stanzas. What else can you show me? Phony, lonely, show me. Only the vowels are the same here, assonance rather than actual rhyme. So much for the mother-son relationship. What about mother-daughter? Here's a song in which the mother protects her daughter from some former boyfriend who is on the phone and just wants to tell her goodbye. Is the mother protecting her daughter or overprotecting her and controlling her? What lies in the background of the song? We don't know. All we have is the immediate phone conversation. We have to guess at the context. It's another Shel Silverstein song given to us by Dr. Hook in The Medicine Show, with Dennis LeCourier's hoarse, pathetic voice getting it just right. A self-pitying heartbreak song with a straight face, but not quite.
Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's busy, too busy to come to the phone. Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's trying to start a new life of her own. Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's happy, so why don't you leave her alone? And the operator says 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes, please. Mrs. Avery, I just gotta talk to her. I'll only keep her a while. Please, Mrs. Avery, I just wanna
says Sylvia's packing. She's gonna be leaving today. Sylvia's mother says Sylvia's marrying a fella down Galveston way. Sylvia's mother says, please don't say nothing to make her start crying and stay. And the operator says 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes, please. Says Sylvia's hurrying, she's catching the 9 o'clock train. Sylvia's mother says, take your umbrella, 'cause Sylvia, it's starting to rain. And Sylvia's mother says, thank you for calling, and sir, won't you call back again? And the operator says 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes.
That was Dr. Hook singing Sylvia's Mother by Shel Silverstein. The song, though not the performance, was autobiographical. There really was a Sylvia. I just changed the last name, Shel said in a 1972 Rolling Stone article. I just changed the last name not to protect the innocent, but because it didn't fit. It happened about 8 years ago and was pretty much the way it was in the song. I called Sylvia and her mother said, she can't talk to you. I said, why not? Her mother said she was packing and she was leaving to get married, which was a big surprise to me. The guy was in Mexico and he was a bullfighter and a painter. At the time, I thought that was like being a combination brain surgeon and encyclopedia salesman. Her mother finally let me talk to her, but her last words were, Shell, don't spoil it. For about 10 seconds, I had this ego charge, as if I could have spoiled it. But I couldn't have spoiled it with a sledgehammer. And there's more to the story. Shell went on. Last Christmas, I got a bad case of holiday melancholy and started calling everyone I knew. I called Sylvia's parents on the off chance she might be home. I hadn't talked to her since that phone call years ago. She was home, visiting, and we talked a little bit. It turns out that she now lives in Paris, and she has a couple of kids. I told her I wrote a song about her. She said, no kidding, what label? That's always stayed in my mind as the worst, though probably unconscious, put-down a writer can have. One of the biggest hits ever, played to death everywhere, and she, the person he wrote it about, she has never heard of it. And doesn't even care. What label, she asks. An irrelevant question, just to be polite. Oh, and here's a footnote to history. They used to have these things called payphones, and you'd put in some money and talk until the operator interrupted to tell you to put in more money. 40 cents more for the next 3 minutes. Just another footnote to history. And now, back to mothers and daughters. Mothers offering advice to daughters. Here's a song sung by Beatrice Kay, a vaudeville singer, whose album The Naughty Nineties recaptures some of those old-time stage performances. Here she sings about a mother's advice to her daughter. The girl's name seems to be Neuralgia. Uh-oh. Mother, why did you name me this way? Neuralgia is going off to the big city, and the advice is, heaven will protect a working girl, as the mother reassures her. This is not, however, the blessing it may at first seem. The mother twists it around to mean that since heaven will protect the working girl, then the girl does not need the money she'll be earning and can send it back home to Mama, who will know how to look after it.
A village maid was leaving home with tears, her eyes was wet. A mother dear was standing near the spot. She says to her neuralgia dear, I hope you won't forget that I'm the only mother you have got.
The city is a wicked place, as anyone can see, and cruel dangers round your path may hurl, your path may hurl. So every week you'd better send your wages back to me.
For a heaven will protect a working girl.
A working girl.
You are going far away, but remember what I say. When you are in the city's giddy whirl, from temptations, crimes, and follies, villains, handsome cabs, and trolleys. Oh, oh, heaven will protect a working girl.
Her dear old mother's words proved true, for soon the poor girl met a man who on her ruin was intent.
He was intent.
He treated her respectful, as those villains always do.
And she supposed he was a perfect gent.
A perfect gent.
But she found different when one night she went with him to dine.
Into a table d'hote so blithe and gay.
So blithe and gay.
And he says to her, after this, we'll have a demi-tasse.
Then to him these brave words the girl did say, the girl did say.
Stand back, villain, go your way. Here I will no longer stay. Although you are a marquis or an Iola, you may tempt the upper classes with your villainous demi-tasses. Oh, 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 heaven will protect a working girl.
I have some serious things to say about the mother-daughter relationship, but let's have another light song. It's what's called a macaronic, which means that it's in two different languages, in this case, English and Yiddish. Oi, Mama, bin ich verliebt, or Oh, Mama, I'm so in love. The great Yiddish actress Molly Picon popularized it in the 1936 film Yiddle Mitten Fiddle. It's the old Shakespearean motif of the girl dressed as a boy who falls in love with the guy and somehow has to overcome the impediment caused by this cross-dressing. You can see the clip of this song on YouTube and watch Molly Picon's cute face and cute stage business as she sings the song. But we have the Barry Sisters version, adapting the words to a more wholesome, I think, context. Though there is the line, when it comes to making love, he gets his point across. Well, yes, making love meant something entirely different before, say, 1955. The song starts in English, lapsing into Yiddish.
Mama, am I in love? Ooh, mama, heaven's above.
He's the third assistant to the guy who says yes to the boss.
Ah, but when it comes to making love, he gets a point across. Ooh, mama, has he got arms? Ooh, mama, what manly charms. I don't care even if he has no money in the bank. Oh, ooh, mama, am I in love?
Wenn es die Spitze auf sein Fiedel als sein Herz geht, die Schlädel, oi, Mama, wird mir geflutschiert. Mit seinen schönen schwarzen Augen hat er mir dann Segen zeigen, oi, Mama, wohin geht es nicht?
Wenn er sucht, hey, die Mädel, wisst ihr, hat er lieb, ein Mädel in sein Spiel kriegt ein Herz rein.
Why, mama, bin ich verliebt, aber little love, aber eure. Why, mama, bin ich verliebt, aber little love, aber eure. Mein Klesmer, jingle, mama, getreue, liegt mir nur in Sinn. Ihr weinet, lachen, weist nicht, mama, auf seine Welt zu finden. Why, mama, why, mama, wenn ein Spitali love sein Biedel. Why, mama, und you, weil die ganze Welt da im genehmen Segen trägt es ihr. Oh,
that then was the Barry Sisters with Oi Mama bin ich verliebt, Oi Mama am I in love. It's a schmaltzy 1940s swing production that actually doesn't really move me all that much. Here, let's have another version, all in Yiddish, closer to the way Molly Pecan sang it, and actually a little more moving. The guy she's fallen in love with is not some dinky underling in a business. The third assistant to the guy who says yes to the boss. He reminds me of Happy Lohman in Death of a Salesman. But instead, she's in love with the hero Yiddle Mitten Fiddle. That is, Yiddle with the fiddle. A klezmer jingle, as she calls him, a musician in a band. Wenn er selbst spielt sich auf sein Fiddle, a schön hat sich Yiddish Liedl. Oi, Mama, wett mir gut und a scher. When he plays, are you listening to Yiddish on community radio in Cambridge? Yes, you are. Yes, the Yiddish show on Cambridge Community Radio. When he plays on his fiddle, a beautiful heartfelt Yiddish song, Oi Mama, I feel so good. You see, it's his art that moves her, and also his schwarze Augen, his black eyes. And here it is. Much more of a klezmer feel, both in its longing and its joy, with Faye Kellerstein singing.
Hi. mamme, oei, wel geweldig bin. Oei, mamme, bin ich verliebt. Oei, mamme, bin ich verliebt. Ich wollt die ganze Welt darum genommen und so geträgt zu sich.
Now that was better than the Barry Singer's version, wasn't it? And isn't this the kind of thing a girl can tell her mother? Confiding to Mama about the state of her heart. Yes, perhaps up to a point, and only in some mother-daughter relationships, those in which the mother helps ease the daughter through the rites of passage. Not all mothers can. It requires a certain amount of letting go to see your daughter come to maturity. It's hard for the father, but perhaps harder for the mother, who might even see her daughter as some kind of rival out there. That's the Snow White setup. The Latin poet Horace has a line about this very thing. Mater pulchra, filia pulchrior, he put it. A beautiful mother, but an even more beautiful daughter. There's a bit of Latin, especially for Jen at Lakenheath. Fairy tales are, as you know, valuable repositories of ancient wisdom about the human condition. And in fairy tales, the mother is often transformed into the stepmother, or the wicked stepmother. This has given the word stepmother a bad connotation, which is a shame, since symbolically, the stepmother is a very important role. At first, it seems that the stepmother is not a true mother. Her harshness to her stepdaughter seems the very opposite of mother love. But wait. Insofar as the stepmother throws the girl out of the house, or the palace, or wherever, isn't she in fact doing her daughter the greatest service? The truly unnourishing mother is the one who holds tight to the girl and doesn't let her go. I remember the mother of a classmate of mine telling my mother that my Ellen, this is Ellen in her mid-20s, already married, my Ellen calls me up every day, and she brings her laundry over so I can do it for her. I suppose it made Ellen's mother happy to do this, but how much good did it do for Ellen? Was she ever going to move on into womanhood? But back to fairy tales. I was thinking in this connection of Little Red Riding Hood. I teach a seminar on fairy tales, in which we usually look at this story. Students are quick to conclude that Little Red Riding Hood is a didactic fable, teaching kids not to talk to strangers. Yes, perhaps we can twist it into this kind of story, but surely that overlooks all the excitement and interest of the story. In fact, that kind of moralistic reading just kills the whole experience. It's much more interesting and profound if we attend to what is actually going on, in particular, if we pay attention to the mother's behavior. The mother gives Little Red the goodies to take to her sick grandmother, and then sends her out into the woods alone. In the Grimm version, she gives her daughter very strict instructions to stay on the path no matter what, and go straight to Grandma's house with no digression. The wolf, fortunately, succeeds in enticing the girl from her mother's path, thus bringing her into the dark woods, in search of beauty, actually. "Little girl, there are lots of beautiful flowers in the woods," the wolf points out. Little Red disobeys her mother, not for selfish reasons then, but in order to find beauty, surely one of the highest motives. And in the end she is eaten, thus symbolically dying to her old self, and comes out of the wolf's stomach a rebirth, as she is now a new woman. If she had stayed on her mother's rigid path, she would have arrived sooner, but she would have remained a girl, still tied to her mother, probably calling her mother every day and bringing her laundry over each week. The mother showed her love through giving advice for Little Red's safety, but the important thing is that she let the girl go. She took a big risk in sending her daughter into the woods alone, and we're to salute her for her courage and wisdom. The great mythic example of a mother-daughter relationship is the story of Demeter and Persephone, a much more complicated story than Little Red Riding Hood. Demeter lost her daughter when the girl was abducted by Hades, the god of the underworld, taken to the nether regions to be his queen. Her mother Demeter's grief was overwhelming, and since she was the goddess of the harvest, the great earth mother, her grief spread to the whole world and blighted the crops. The world faced famine. It's the image of maternal grief at the loss of the daughter, a grief we must not treat lightly. In the end, she got her daughter back again, but only partially. Persephone had eaten some seeds in the underworld. The number of seeds varies according to which version we follow. And eating these seeds meant that she had to stay in the underworld for a corresponding number of months. 3 months, or even 6 months in some versions. There are many ways to look at this myth, of course, such as its image of the need for seeds to die before coming back to life, or the wise perception that the world must mix its joyful abundance with a certain amount of sorrowful loss. And then there's also the issue of the one god raping the goddess with the approval of his brother, the king of the gods. But what we may want to look at for our purposes is that the story is told almost exclusively from the mother Demeter's point of view. We never hear Persephone's views. Was she glad to see her mother again? Had she, in fact, been happy to be the consort of the great god Hades? As far as I can recall, in all other myths that involve Persephone, we see her sitting on her throne in the underworld, stately and not discouraged, not discontented. But we don't know. She remains a mysterious complement to her mother's grief and joy, reminding us that this very complicated mother-daughter relationship always contains mystery. No one, least of all mothers or daughters, will make it out. Love's bitter mystery, as Yeats put it, and as Stephen Dedalus sings to his dying mother in the novel Ulysses. There's lots more we could say on this subject. We could spend time looking at the Earth Mother in all her manifestations. What Earth Mothers do you know? Women, or perhaps not exclusively women, who give no thought for themselves but put all their energy into nourishing and providing for others. There is the Empress on the tarot pack too, sitting there calm, stately, and welcoming among nature's bounty. And there is our alma mater, which is Latin for nurturing mother. Who is your alma mater? It's usually used in reference to one's school or college or university, the institution that fed you as you grew. It's worth looking back at the times of our lives when we've grown and ask who or what was the nurturing mother, the alma mater, for us at the time. That's your homework. Give it some thought. And to end, a hymn taking us to the highest mythic image of motherhood, divine motherhood, or the mother of God. Yes, even God needs nourishing and mothering. Even God needs to grow, at least in his temporal manifestations. But before that, let me just say good night to you from Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and I'll be back next time on the theme of, well, I'm not quite sure. Give me a few days to play around with ideas. But now, let's leave it in John Taverner's hands with his Hymn to the Mother of God, sung by the Cambridge Singers, conducted by John Rutter. Attend to the sound and the way it lifts you, wave after wave, a kind of nurturing, after all.